On your journey through life, you are the hero. There are times, however, when it is beneficial to have an advisor to guide you along your path. Welcome to the Smart Money Simplified Podcast with Brent Mikosh, Certified Financial Planner, Certified Investment Management Analyst, and co-founder of MP Advisors LLC. In this podcast, Brent discusses some of the most important and interesting topics of the day as they relate to finance, the economy, and beyond. Now, on to the show.
Welcome to the Smart Money Simplified Podcast with your host, Brent Mikosh. Brent, good to be with you again. How are you?
Bill, I'm doing awesome, man. I do want to share this experience with you. So I got back from Las Vegas this past weekend and went to see U2 at the Sphere. That was the primary reason that we went to Vegas. And to give you an idea, the concert was on February 10th. There was some other stuff happening in Las Vegas that weekend as well. But we went for U2 and it was unbelievable, man. I mean, I've been to a bunch of concerts. I love music. Never have I had an experience where your optical nerves are literally blown out of your head while one of your favorite bands is actually singing. It was absolutely incredible.
I have read and heard all kinds of things about the Sphere, but I've not seen it. And I got to tell you, I'm super intrigued. So I'm a little bit envious of the fact that you got to experience it. It's supposed to be just an amazing experience.
It was cool. And what we did not know, and so these were present. This is a present from my wife because she knows that I'm a fan. And she thought February 10th in Las Vegas is pretty close to Valentine's Day. It'll be a great weekend to go. And so we buy these tickets and then we look at hotel rooms, and hotel rooms are astronomical. So I'm like, what the heck is going on in Vegas the weekend of February the 10th? And so I Google Las Vegas events February 10th. I see Lunar New Year. And I'm like, wow, this must be a gigantic deal because they've just quadrupled all the hotel prices. And finally, a friend of mine says, well, you do know what's happening on February 11th in Las Vegas, don't you? But, you know, when the game was done, obviously, Chiefs, 49ers, Chiefs came back, won a thing in overtime. And you realize that for these players, even if you won the game, you know, it's a culmination of a lifelong journey that they've been on to get at the top of their game. And then for some, you know, they'll go on to the next season and you're pushing to the next thing. But I'm sure there's a few people on the Chiefs that were retiring. And it does beg the question of what comes next, you know, because you've hit this pinnacle of your career. And I'm taking this story somewhere, by the way, but you've hit this pinnacle in your career. And you're in the Chiefs' case, they won this game. Everything should be absolutely perfect. But I think that what you find with both professional football players, athletes, or what we're going to talk about today, founders that have exited their business, when that major victory and everything is on paper and looks perfect and you should be absolutely thrilled with the outcome, big check is now in the bank, but it leaves some questions about what comes next. And the guest we have today is Jerome Myers. He's got a really interesting background, which I know we're going to dive in today, but he's made a career now. Actually, Jerome, you got multiple careers, man, but I would say one of your careers is helping to coach entrepreneurs that have exited a business in terms of, you know, really designing that next chapter of their life. So with that, Jerome, I think that's a very shallow introduction of really what you've done, because you've done a ton of stuff in real estate and in the corporate world, and obviously now what you're doing in coaching. But why don't you just introduce yourself to those that are listening today?
Man, I'm just grateful to be here, man. Thanks for having me, Brent. It was good meeting you at EWAS. Looking forward to deepening a connection. And the title of your podcast is super interesting, because when we start talking about simplification, you realize how complicated things get in order to get to the place where you can simplify them. And so I just appreciate you helping people get a better understanding of things. But the only way that you can help them do that is through true expertise. And so, yeah, I mean, we help people figure out what their next is. And it doesn't matter if you built a $100 million company or you're exiting from some sports team or you're ending your career and moving into retirement after being a civil servant like my dad. You know, I was fortunate enough to hold a Bible for him as when he got sworn in as mayor last week. And that's going to be like his next chapter, because
that's a big next.
It was pretty cool. He'd finished serving as postmaster and he'd been out for about a year, and he was just kind of going through it, man. He was doing yard work for other people. Now he's 65, 66, 67, something like that. And he's out doing yard work for other people. I didn't get it, right? I didn't understand why he was doing it. But he came to my house one weekend and he had a scar on his face. And I was like, what is going on? And he was like, yeah, I've been having trouble with my balance and I fell and it hit my face because I've learned to just fall and roll. He jumped out of airplanes for 20 years. So he feels like the fall and roll still works the same way. I don't think his bones and muscles are set up the same way, but you know, he's doing what he's doing. And so I say all that to say that anybody who goes through a major transition, they're going through an exit. When we think about the founders, we came up with this framework. We call it 8 exits of a founder, because I don't think anybody actually codified what the journey or the progression is that entrepreneurs go through. We're just kind of running around in this amygdala and it's just a big squishy ball. And we're like, oh yeah, we're making money. You look at the account, I can pay my bills or I can pay myself this month. And then it's like, oh, well now I'm wealthy. And then, but nobody's ever like, here's the roadmap. And so the 8 exits start with going from being an employee to being self-employed. And you end up being chief everything officer when you do that. From chief everything officer, you start managing your frontline employees. And those are usually people either do it one or two ways. They go to sales first, somebody who can bring in new business, or they go to an admin assistant because they decide that they're the rainmaker. Whichever path they go down, they start having people do things for them that they don't have to do themselves, but they still have to manage it. And so they're involved in the day-to-day. That next level, they become a thought leader and they're also a product manager. So they have a frontline supervisor managing the worker bees. They're managing the manager of the worker bees, but they're out creating content that brings people in. So think content marketing, think speaking, think being out in the world and being an evangelist for the brand. The next level, the next exit is being CEO 2.0 or a true CEO, where you're out of the day-to-day. You've probably got an operations officer in, you got other people, might have a director of operations. It all depends on how big the organization is and what you want to call it. But the thing is, you're out of the day-to-day and you're focusing on things that are more strategic. After that, we encourage people to have a board. And we want them to move from CEO to chairman of the board. And this is the switch that allows people to believe, to disassociate themselves from the business and think about the business as a product that can be bought and sold instead of the products that the business creates to be bought and sold. And this important distinction or this important step or exit is one that is skipped by a lot of people because they don't want other people having influence on how the company is run. But when you don't disassociate from the entity in this way, people who then sell their company for 6, 7, 8, 9 figures experience a phenomenon that we call the founder's exit paradox. And it's the unraveling or the disassociation that you have from the enterprise that you created. You'll hear a lot of people say, oh, it's my baby, or, you know, it's like having another child. And it's this connection that they've had to the enterprise that they've been working on. Most people 15 to 40 years, depending on what industry they're in. And so that gets us up to exit 6. And this is the one most people talk about because it's the liquidity event. What I've seen, though, especially for financial advisors and people who don't have any identity outside of their work, is that they don't actually want to exit because they don't know what they would do next. And so they keep coming up with ways for them to say that they need to continue to stay in the business. This, for me, is a tragedy because, one, they don't get the financial windfall that most people get when they exit. Right, you got all this value. For most people, their most valuable asset is their business if they build a big one. And so if you don't have the liquidity event, you don't actually get the harvest of the nest egg or the value that's been trapped in the business. And the other thing is, after you've done something for 30 years, I suspect that you've done the contribution that you can make. And there's probably another contribution, a bigger contribution that you can make to the world based on all the experiences and relationships that you cultivated over the years of building the thing. Most people, when they get involved in these first enterprises, are the first one that works. They're doing it because they can do it to make money. The second enterprise is more about passion. It's more about purpose. It's more about impact. And when you have the freedom of the resources of time, money, and energy because you've been able to have that liquidity event, it gives you the option to really focus on and do things that might not seem to make money on the surface and go into those without worrying about all the outflow. And we actually had a conversation about outflow before we started recording. So that's exit six and some of the stuff that surrounds exit six. Exit seven is a post-exit portfolio. And so you talked about some of the things that I've done, and I'm patient zero on kind of this process because these are the things that I went through. And so, you know, when we had our exit, we went and started buying real estate, and each one of the real estate that we bought was actually a business. It wasn't just like a rental home. We bought apartment complexes. And so we figured out how to improve the value of those apartment complexes. And we sold one on Monday, and we sold one last year, and we sold one the year before, but we've been able to double the value of the properties and then have be able to sell them so that we can extract liquidity. And it's our belief that if you can go into deals, add value, increase the value of the actual entity, sell them, then you can continue to grow whatever you got from your exit instead of what most people do, which is go down. And so that would be exit seven, is building that post-exit portfolio. And exit eight is what we like to call the fully endowed philanthropic organization. And so for here, you think foundation, you know, Bill and Melinda Gates have done some pretty cool stuff and some other folks. And I'm not saying that everybody needs to build something that big. But what I am saying is if there's something that you're extremely passionate about, and I call it a problem you want to eradicate from the face of the planet, and nobody's working on it or working on it in an organized manner, or there's not funding for it, and you have the capacity to invest your proceeds for a lasting legacy, then it might make sense for you to be able to do that. And so we want to help people identify those things. And so, you know, those are the eight exits of a founder and kind of the framework. And then, you know, we could talk about the founder's exit paradox, which I think is the thing that most people are dreading and putting things off to avoid whatever pain they think they're going to experience.
Well, just when you went through those eight exits, you hit so many key points that for me are becoming like my life's work to try to make sure that these things don't occur. If you look at, I mean, and I know you know these numbers because I heard you speak about them when we were down in Florida together. When I look at, some people will say, hey, I'm never going to exit my business. I love what I do, or my kids are going to do it, or I don't need to make any plans for this. You're exiting your business one way or another. You know, 1,000%. I mean, you're either going to sell this thing or you're going to die or it's going to fail. The one way or another, this business gets exited. And what I think is tragic is even, you know, less than half, I believe is the number, have a successful sale, period. Out of those that did, about 70% absolutely regret it. But, you know, I think that you mentioned, I think it was in stage five or so there, disassociating yourself from the day-to-day running mm-hmm. of the business. Maybe was it five? Am I correct on that?
Yeah, it is five. You're doing good, man.
and you know, and the reason this is so important is because what I really try to do if I'm talking to founders is that being able to prepare your business for an exit is really good business. Making it marketable makes it more lean, more efficient, more ready to go. And I think that's it's hugely important because if you are a business owner, 80-85% of your net worth is tied up in the business. And what you've got is a hugely volatile, extremely risky, giant single stock position that's illiquid, you know, to add into it. And if you can do the things within the business to add some liquidity, make this thing ready to sell, the business is going to run better. But you've also created enormous optionality in the future.
Yeah. So what I've seen on a smaller scale is a grandparent paying off a house and then giving it to the grandkid. And then the grandkid doesn't have the wherewithal to pay for the maintenance and some of the other things that go with the older home. And then, you know, before it's all said and done, they've sold it to somebody at a discount or they lost it in foreclosure because they didn't pay the taxes. Insert whatever first world problem you want to insert. And so I think the most important thing for anybody to understand is, one, your kids might not want the business. Even if they say they do, they might not want it. And even if they do want it, you don't want to hand them a mess. Right. And so getting it ready so that, one, you don't have to be there, makes it an asset that you can just cool income off of without you actually having to trade your time for that money. The other thing that it does, though, is it forces there to be systems and processes and allows you to actually be a business owner instead of self-employed. If you're working in the business every day, you're not a business owner. Even though you may have your name on the operating agreement and you might have the shares and all that stuff's nice, but you're self-employed. And I don't think that's actually what most people are striving for. And again, I can't emphasize this enough, so I think it's worth repeating. The liquidity event is valuable. Being able to extract the value that you've built into the enterprise is what it's worth. Most people don't have a ton of cash flow kicking out of the business. But if you can sell a piece and extract or harvest that value, you can change your family's situation for all of your descendants.
And to your point earlier that you mentioned as well is you can open yourself up for that act too. And let's talk about that. Let's talk about the founder, the operator, let's say the founder, the business owner that had this successful exit. Now the numbers show up in their bank account that are far larger than they're going to need to live for the rest of their life. What's amazing is there's so many people that have an enormous problem with that psychologically. Mm-hmm. Talk about that a little bit, because I know you've had some great conversations on your website, which I'd encourage people to look up, and also just overall throughout your career with people that, you know, they got to the top of the mountain, and the question was like, now what?
Yeah, it's always now what, or what now, or what's my next? Well, it's just like hitting the lottery, right? And most people hit the lottery are in a worse financial position after 5 years than the folks who don't and just continue to build wealth. And so you literally have to become a person who's capable of managing that type of wealth. You go from being a grinder to becoming a newly exited operator who has to have the skill set of resource allocation. And it's resource allocation in a way that they've never had it, because if you bootstrapped your business, you're used to scrimping and scraping. And now you have all of the resources at your disposal. And for a lot of people, they don't know what to do with that abundance. I had one guy that I've talked to in the past. He's like, it's not about what you do, it's about what you don't do. He talks about restraints and being able to put frames and gates around things so that you don't end up in an undisciplined or wasteful state. And that's what happens with a lot of people. They end up in this space where they're just being extravagant. It's like, oh, well, I'm going to buy this person a house, and I'm going to buy this person a car, and I'm going to pay for this person's college, and I'm going to venture into this field that I know nothing about, but I think the founder's really smart, and so I'm going to put money into their company. And then they look up, and it's like, I didn't think I could spend that money, and now they don't have any money. The other end of the spectrum is the person who's scared to run out of money. And so I remember sitting in a conference and a guy on stage, he's like, yeah, I'm worth $11 million and I don't spend any of it I think he said he lives off of 1% of it a year or something like that, because he's scared that he'll end up sleeping under a bridge. And I was just thinking to myself, like, have you ever slept under a bridge? Which the answer was no. But he was like, I'm terrified. And so it's like, now that I have the money, can I actually use it? And the money is neutral. It's neither positive nor negative. It's how you choose to allocate the resources. And so we've identified, and I think it's commonplace, but this last one never really kind of rose to the surface for me. When we talk about resource allocation, it's always been time or money. Right. And I think from most advisors, it's always time and money. But there's this third one called energy. And I think your ability to allocate energy in the places where you think you can get the maximum return is something that isn't discussed very often. And so, you know, it's our mission to help people find problems they want to eradicate and then use their resources after they've allocated them for the things that they feel are important to pursue this passion project so that they can have the impact that they actually want to have on the planet. Because when somebody's reading your eulogy, you want that eulogy to read as you envisioned it, not as it kind of played out. And I just really appreciate you saying the relationship with the business is going to end at some point. And I don't think most people as founders would be proud if all that their eulogy said was they were the owner of this business. I just don't see that being the thing that they wanted it to be.
Well, I think it's shocking that for people when they realize how much of their perception of themselves is tied up in that. Different scenario for me because I was not exiting a business, but I was when I was younger, I was a member of the New York Stock Exchange as a specialist trader down on the floor, and left and traveled for about a year. And you would think that, and it was in a lot of ways, it was a phenomenal experience. But I remember the first probably 2 or 3 months, I had this elation because, you know, I was youngish. I was 33 at the time I left, and but was not married, so I didn't have, you know, there's no kids. There was really nothing tying me back. I had plenty of money because it was a pretty good stint down there, and I'm traveling around the world. I'm like, this is great, but I did hit this kind of existential crisis about 4 or 5 months into it, where I'm like, well, shit,
There
you
it
know,
is.
who am I? You know, I'm because the floor New York Stock Exchange floor trader is kind of a sexy job to be doing in your 20s and early 30s. And you're not doing this anymore. And what comes next? And then also there's doubts. Am I equipped to do anything else? You know, is there anything I have that's marketable? And I really, really went through that at a pretty young age. And I would say it took me realistically 3 or 4 years after I traveled for a full year, after I got back, to put that back together. And now I didn't have a legacy that I left in the form of a business that might be out there operating beyond me. And that would add in the sense of, well, maybe it didn't really need me to begin with, and all the questions of self-worth associated with that. Now, you've told me a little bit of your story when we first met. I think one of the reasons you might have a unique insight into these kind of questions is because you had a pretty dramatic experience yourself when you were younger that probably caused you to question the path that you're on. Do you want to touch on that a little bit?
Yeah, I remember it well. It was August 13th, 2005. I was on my way to get a haircut, and it was my first haircut in the town that I just moved into. And I decided not to use GPS that day. I was just going to wander around and figure it out. I couldn't be too hard. They had to have a barbershop, even though it was a one-stop sign town. And you know, after about 30 or 40 minutes of driving country roads, I dumped truck across the center line and hit me head on. I was going 50 or 60 miles per hour when we collided. And after being trapped in the car for 1 hour with the dashboard on my thighs and getting cut out with the jaws of life and having a hydraulic jack placed in between my legs to push the dashboard off of my legs so that I could be extracted from the car and then medevaced 1 hour away to a hospital and go directly into surgery for 14 hours and come out and recover for a little bit and then go back in so they could do the other leg. Spending 3 days in ICU and another few days on the orthopedic floor before I went home in a wheelchair. I got the opportunity to ask a lot of questions about what this was all for and if this was really it and who was I if I wasn't the engineer that I had the degree to be working at this company and so on and so forth. And that time to reflect really put me in a place of questioning, is it really about the luxury cars and the fence and the two dogs, or is there something bigger that we're actually placed here for? And every single time that I've asked the question, I found that there's a bigger purpose for us. We're here to positively impact the lives of the people, not only in our home, but those that we come in contact with every day. In fact, I have an affirmation that says, everybody I come in contact with is better because of our encounter. And so for me, it's like, how can I leave each person and each place that I visit just a little bit better, a little bit warmer, a little bit more aware? And that's part of the reason why we're here today. Whenever I get the opportunity to share, I want to tell the story because I don't want people to suffer unnecessarily, which is what happens when you don't know that you're going to experience these feelings, what we call the founder's exit paradox, on the backside of a major achievement. We want people to know that there's going to be some less than stellar feelings. We want people to know that it's normal so that they don't hide it, so that they don't pretend. Because people who haven't reached that level of success, pinnacle, we call them apex performers, they're going to tell you that everything is perfect and you should just be grateful for all the things that happen. But the reality is, you don't feel that way, at least not completely. you are questioning. You're wondering where your self-image is, because most of us introduce ourselves with our name and how we make money, right? And then we move to defining our relationships. And for most of us, at least three of our five relationships that we communicate with most regularly are tied to our work. And then once the work is gone, well, you had this rigorous schedule and you knew what you were doing on a day-to-day basis. And now you go into this blob of uncertainty. When you were traveling around the world for a year, you didn't know what the day was going to bring. You just knew that it was going to be an adventure. And while you may have been excited for an adventure, having no certainty for a prolonged period of time will leave you adrift and probably pretty miserable, because you can't predict anything. The mind likes predictability as much as they like the mystery. And so we've also identified six centers of doubt. I talked about three of them: self-image, relationships, and work. The others are health, prosperity, and significance. But you go through and you ask all these questions as you're navigating the Founder's Exit Paradox. And for us, our belief is to help people get answers. And if you can help them find the North Star, because I think we as humans, we need a problem to solve. And if we don't see a problem to solve, we'll make a problem, which is why a lot of business owners can't get out of the day to day. They feel like they have to be there. But if you talk to any M&A professional, they will say that the more valuable the founder is to the company, the less valuable the company is. And so you want the company to not need you.
That's 100%
true. You want to maximize valuation. You want the company not to need you.
You do not want the company to need you. It's true. Yeah.
So... yeah, man, I'm just super grateful. One, because I know I'm on borrowed time. There's no way. In fact, when I was sitting in the car with glass in my arms and blood all over the place, blood on the freaking airbag, I asked somebody to use the phone to call my house so I could let the folks that were there know that something bad had happened. And before I asked them that, they were coming around the edge of the car and they're like, "He's dead." I was like, "I'm not dead. I need to use your phone." So, you know, I know I'm on borrowed time, and it's my mission to end its suffering for as many people as possible while I'm here.
Now, when you came, bring me to your timeline here. So you came out of that experience, and obviously you had this sense that you know, we're here for something a lot bigger than just getting to work with the engineering degree every day. Did you get into real estate after that? What was next for you professionally after that accident?
Yeah, so I continued to climb corporate, got into leadership, and then so I was working for a power company designing transmission lines. Did that for another 5 or 7 years, left, got into consulting firms, started flying around the world and the country doing projects. And then the last kind of job that I had, I built a $20 million division for a Fortune 550 company. So I was employee number 2 in that division. $0 on my P&L on January 13th. By end of September, I had 175 people on my team. End of the year, we had 30% profit margins on $20 million. When I got a phone call on December 24th at like 4:55, and the guy that I saw every other week or talked to every other week and saw once a quarter said, "Hey, Jerome, we're going to lay half the team off." It did something to my spirit, the thought of not being in control. And so we went through the layoffs. I guess it was an experience I needed to have to learn that if you give up your when you give up your choice, when you say somebody else is making me do it, that you're taking a cop out. I needed that experience so that I would never go back down that path. And so we put Humpty Dumpty back together again, did another $20 million. But I remember the next year, the Tuesday before Black Friday, telling the team, "Hey, I don't know what's going to happen between now and the end of the year. Please don't spend all your money on Black Friday." I just felt all my leadership credibility oozing out on the floor. And I was like, I got to get out of here, because the buck doesn't stop with me. I'm not the final decision maker. And I dropped out and then went into the real estate thing full time. I thought I was going to buy an apartment, got turned down by 10 banks, started fixing and flipping. Eventually, by being in the real estate community, got partnered up with some guys to get my first deal done. And because my name was in a paper, the same banks that turned me down less than a year before were now interested in having conversations with me. So cultivated a couple of relationships from there, built a multi-million-dollar real estate portfolio. We're still a general partner in it, and it's been a wild ride, but it was a lonely one. And so for anybody who ever sees the video, they'll see this wolf behind me on the wall. And that's exactly how I felt. And so he's there to remind me that being a lone wolf is not the answer. When I was searching and seeking for, well, how is this making the world any better? Sure, it was improving property value. Sure, the people who lived in the complex had a better experience because we renovated well, and our property management team treats people with respect and dignity and understanding and compassion. But for me, it wasn't actually solving the problem that I really felt like I was placed here to do. And that was really tied to helping people move into that next space and not staying stuck in something that they've added the value that they're going to add to it. And so I started supporting people who were going through big transitions. And then we started seeing this pattern of people really struggling and having a major accomplishment or success. They're the people who are saddest because they've hit the apex, they've hit the pinnacle of whatever success. And it's like, well, how do I top that? And for some people, the pinnacle of success is being the varsity quarterback or the head cheerleader, the co-captain of the cheerleading squad. And you'll see them wearing their Letterman jacket and talking about the good old days, and that's all they can talk about. But I love when people are talking about their future. I love when people are talking about what they're working on or how they're making an impact or what they're passionate or excited about, because now they got something to live for. They've got, it's not just reminiscing, and a lot of our memories are lies anyway. So why can't we build a future and envision a reality that's something that's actually going to have the impact that we want it to have?
So tell us, you've got a book out. It's Your Next. You can search that up on Amazon, and I've got a copy, and is on my reading list to dig into that one as well. Tell us about who you're working with and what you're doing from the coaching standpoint and the system you put together.
Yeah, man. So your next is the acronym NEXT is nourish, explore, evaluate, nourish, evaluate, explore, and transcend. And these are the four steps that we believe you need to walk through in order to figure out what you're going to do next. We believe that you should do it before you leave the old thing. It's kind of like having a transitionary person if you're leaving a relationship. We found when people just go to that cold stop, that the feelings are really intense, and then getting momentum started again is pretty difficult. But with nourish, so you actually want to take time and reflect and appreciate the things that you've done, because I think a lot of apex performers just skip over that part. They don't celebrate the achievement or the accomplishment. They just move on. You're like, oh yeah, that's done. What's next? And that is not actually optimal. It doesn't lock in the dopamine. It doesn't change the identity. There's so many psychological factors that go into the actual time of reflection, slowing down, understanding. And then when you move to the evaluate, you're really looking for how, what skill sets do I have and what can they be applied against? Because most things are transferable. You spend all this time, especially if you're in a people forward facing or customer facing role, there's just so many skills that you develop that can be used against other problems. The other thing that we want to do is understand what problems are out there that you're curious about or interested in helping solve. From there, you want to go to explore. And so we don't always know exactly how to solve the problem, but we do know that there's something there. We do know that people are experiencing pain. And then within that, there's a bunch of different people experience that pain at different levels or intensities, right? If we think about the person who is leaving their corporate role and becoming an entrepreneur or becoming self-employed, that exit pain is different from somebody who just sold a business for $100 million. It's just two different experiences. Now, do they both have problems? They do. And so I think it's important to understand, well, what level of intensity of pain or what size problem do you want to solve? And so that's what you do in the explore phase. And then transcend is the execution, right? Just absolutely knocking it out the park and having a reason to get up on a daily basis and go solve this problem. Put your cape on, put your chin up, and poke your chest out so that you can go out there and be the superhero that I think we're all designed to be, so that you can get to that climatic scene where the smoke is in the back and the rays of sunlight are coming down and the people are running up and saying how the life has been changed as a result of you being a part of it.
And so people, you mentioned that hopefully before the sale or before the exit, they reach out to you. And I think based on our discussion today and knowing a little bit about you, it's probably, you know, somebody that's in a business that they're building, and you know, when you're getting to that next level where, to your point, you're about to step out of the day-to-day stuff and you're more now running the business as opposed to running the actually operational side of the business, that would probably be a really great time for people to start thinking about this stuff. Is that in those eight steps here, is that about the time frame where it makes sense?
Yes. Right. So when you move, when you're moving, like you're CEO and things are going and you're working on 5-year things versus 5-minute things, like now you've got some bandwidth to consider what you're moving into. When you move from CEO to chairman of the board, you have to have something else going on. Right. Being a chairman of the board is not a full-time role, and you've got this extra time. And yeah, there might be grandkids because kids have graduated from college now. There might be some golf, there might be some trips, but you still have energy. You still have vigor. And that in and of itself needs to be harnessed, because if not, then there's collateral damage created as a result of not being able to place that energy in a productive space. And so that's when you want to start doing it. And that makes it so it's not as intense as it would have to be if you go to kind of the valley after selling or getting out and trying to figure out how you're going to climb that next mountain. You want to be able to see the other mountain from the mountain you're on, and not from the bottom of the mountain. If you can catch that thing as you're going over the peak and you're like, okay, we're going down here, but we're going to go back up the other side. Think about the roller coaster hills. That for me is the magic.
It's a great analogy. Now I got a personal question for you that you don't have to ask or answer if you don't want to. What role, if any, does religious faith play in your life?
So it's interesting. I believe in love, right? And I think it crosses all of the different backgrounds. I grew up in a Baptist church. I guess my dad was Methodist, but he's always been the head deacon. He's the head deacon at the church that he's in now. I had responsibilities of ushering because I didn't like singing. and so I grew up in church. And in 2000 and I guess it was 2013, maybe 14, I was on a trip to Ghana, and I went to Elamina, which is it's a fortress. Some people call it a slave castle in Ghana. And it's one of the most famous ones because of the number of people that went through that passage. And I got to tour it. And one of the things that really stood out for me was there was a worship hall on top of what they called the slave dungeon when we were going on the tour. And there was this, I don't know if people are familiar with these, but there was like this letter slot that the parishioners could look down into where all these people were captive before they went into service. And for the life of me, I couldn't understand how people who were being parishioners could look to people who were in chains and stuck in these three different chambers for up to 90 days because a ship came every 90 days, depending on when they were brought to this holding place, and not do something about it. It did something to my spirit because it did not look like love to me. And so I stripped away kind of all of the religion on the backside of that experience and actually getting to the door of no return, which was the last door that people walked through while they were on their native soil before getting in a little boat to go to the big boat to make the journey across the Atlantic. And filling the spirits and filling the energy and being stuck there in that space, not being able to move and just feeling the tears streaming down my face. And I wanted nothing more than for all humans to see other humans as humans. And I felt that if I could be the example of love and understanding and compassion, that I could potentially help start some other things that, and I just feel like it's a universal principle. And so I question a lot of things, but I don't question whether or not love is the answer for us being better. And so that's where I sit, is can you handle other people with love? Even if that means disassociating yourself from them because you know that they aren't moving in love, or that your love is enabling them to do things that aren't beneficial for them to demonstrate self-love.
That's a beautiful answer. I asked that because I was recently having a conversation with my sister, and the religious systems that we follow day to day, she and I'm very close with my sister. The religious systems we follow are very different. But what we, and as actually my sister articulated this, and I thought it was absolutely brilliant, is she said, you know, I've kind of gotten to this point in my life where I think that those people that are supporting life and growth and creation are that is good. And those that are supporting, you know, destruction, you know, hurtful things, that is bad. And it got me really thinking. If you look at the world through that lens, it does become pretty clear that everything is kind of falling on one of those two sides. Is it growth and creation? Is it a movement towards something greater, or is it pain and destruction a movement towards something worse? I don't know, I felt like I needed to ask you that question. I got a really profound response from you in that. So thank you for sharing that. Jerome, I could talk to you for hours, but I know you've got limited time. If people want to reach out to you first, who should be reaching out to you? We know where they are in the stage, but who's the kind of person that you want to be work with moving forward, and how do they reach you?
Yeah, I think those folks who've built 7 or 8 9-figure businesses and they're thinking about what they might be able to do on the backside of exiting that company, even if they only sell a piece, we should have a conversation. We, one, think we can help you design your exit so that it is one that you actually enjoy. And so you're not one of the 3 out of every 4 people who regret selling their business. The other thing that we believe we can do is help you figure out what you're going to do on the backside of the exit. I think there's only 2 people that really pass through that door of exit, and it's the financial advisor that the person has and some type of exit advisor. Everybody else is going to get blocked. They're going to get strained out because, one, their compensation ends at that point, but two, you know, their goal is to help you get to the door of the exit and get to the liquidity event. But there's a whole lot of life on the backside of it. It's the liquidity event is kind of like the marriage ceremony. And now you got to actually stay married. And so it's my vision that we can help people do that. And those are the people we're best equipped to help. We can help others, but the ones that we can help the most are going to be those folks who are thinking about getting married, if I can use that analogy.
And how they find you? How do people find you?
Yeah. So the exitparadox.com, they can go get all kinds of cool stuff. We've got white papers, we got books, we've got, podcast called Dream Catchers, and they can find all that stuff there.
Awesome. And Jerome, thank you, man. This was a wonderful conversation, and hope we have a chance to meet again and talk in the future.
Man, let's not hope, man. Let's plan it so
All
we can stay
right.
in touch. I love what you're doing. I love your heart, brother.
I like it. Thank you.
That was a, as usual, Brent, a really great conversation. Jerome, thank you very much for your insight and your time. That was fantastic. Thank you very much for being on the podcast.
Thanks for having me, Bill.
No, it's up to Brent. Brent is brilliant at bringing interesting people on this podcast and then talking to them about it and making the podcast about his guest. And it's a formula that does not fail. It really doesn't. Brent, for the people who are listening who are thinking, this guy's interesting and I'd like to have a further conversation with him. How would they get a hold of you?
Yeah, sure. Our number in here is 602-255-0555. Either myself or Andy or Kayla, a member of the team, will pick up. Pretty active on LinkedIn. Put quite a bit of content up there. Or mpadvisorsaz.com or smartmoneysimplified.com has our contact information on the web.
That's fantastic. Thanks, Brent. Listeners, if you are not a subscriber already, I don't know why you're not, hit the subscribe button, okay? That way you don't have to remember where or when you heard the podcast. Every time Brent comes out with a new edition, you'll be notified and you won't miss another edition. On behalf of Brent and everybody at MP Advisors, thank you for listening today. I'm Bill Tucker, reminding you that you can go out and make today a great day or not. It's your choice. Thank you for listening.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Smart Money Simplified Podcast. Have any questions about topics covered during the show? Visit www.smartmoneysimplified.com or give us a call at 602-255-0555. Don't forget to click the follow button below to be notified when new episodes become available. The information covered and posted represents the views and opinions of the hosts and/or guests and does not necessarily represent the views or opinions of Raymond James Financial Services Incorporated. The content has been made available for informational and educational purposes only. The content is not intended to be a substitute for professional financial advice. Always seek the advice of your financial advisor or other qualified financial service providers with any questions you may have regarding your individual situation. Securities are offered through Raymond James Financial Services Incorporated, member FINRA, and SIPC. Investment advisory services offered through Raymond James Financial Services Advisors Incorporated, MP Advisors, LLC, is not a broker/dealer and is independent of Raymond James Financial Services.